from Roscommon, bred and buttered in Roscommon. Let me welcome somebody we know as a friend for now decades, as I welcome the leader of the St. Patrick's Day Parade, Hilary Byrne. Hilary, you're very welcome indeed.
Thank you very much, Adrian, and good morning to you.
And good morning to you, too. Tell us a little bit about yourself. Growing up in Ireland and then that transition to becoming an immigrant to the United States.
Well, I grew up between Boyle and Carrick and Shannon on the borders of Roscommon and Leitrim. And believe it or not, Adrian, in the 1970s, I attended a two-teacher national school, which for people here in the United States will be elementary and middle school. And then I went on to St. Mary's College in Boyle. And then I did a degree in agricultural science in University College Dublin. And I worked in Ireland for 3 years. And one of my claims to fame in Ireland is I introduced wrapping of the bale silage in the west of Ireland, which is a very prominent agricultural feature in the west of Ireland today and all over Ireland. But I was the person who introduced it for the company that I worked with in Ireland before. I decided to take a vacation to the United States around Christmas time, where I was then offered a job teaching. And sure, I went back to Ireland and came back 2 months later and took up a position teaching here in the United States. And literally, Adrian, 30 years later, 2 weeks ago, I am still here living in the United States. And it's been an amazing trip from the point of view that if somebody had said 2 months prior before I immigrated from Ireland that I would end up living in the United States, I would have said, nope, I was going to stay in Ireland. And yet, 30 years later, I am here in the United States and have not looked back.
Well, yeah, Hilary, you mentioned, of course, there that your national school education in Ireland was the two-teacher school.
Yes.
Likewise with myself from Addie Mass down in Mayo. And to make matters worse, you know who my two teachers were in the national school, I'll tell you.
Your father and your mother, I guess. Am I close?
My God, I want to tell you. You talk about drawing the short straw. Oh, my God. Anyway, growing up and actually attending all your education in Ireland, which obviously stood to you when you came to the United States and in fact became a teacher, a professor here, if you were to compare education in Ireland or in fact the curriculum of both countries, what are the major differences? And we have to, we grant you that this is now 30 years later, so let's not try to compare them today. But coming back, when you came here and you began a career as a teacher and as a professor, what were the main differences, rather?
Well, one of the main differences is the teacher, I felt, had to do an awful lot of extra work. But then bear in mind, I had not been in teaching prior to coming to the United States. And to one of the biggest challenges, and it's not just here in the United States, but it's a worldwide challenge, is to motivate students to do their best. And one of the things that I have found after 30 years of teaching is that if you always, always treat students like with respect, it always comes back to you. I remember talking to a group of students in the South Bronx when I taught in the South Bronx in a Catholic school, at Monsignor Scanlon High School. Mm-hmm. And we had finished the class a couple of minutes early. And I said to them, I said, what do you think of me? And they said, Mr. Byrne, you respect us. And I was floored from the point of view that here was a group of inner city South Bronx kids, even though they were in Catholic school, they had a level of respect for me that I had given to them. And teachers would say, well, how come you don't have an issue with a certain student? And I would say, I don't know. And that's something I carry through all my dealings, not just with students, but with everybody. I always say to my son even, I says, you always treat everybody with respect. Doesn't matter whether they clean the floors, whether they're a senator or a president of a country, you treat everybody with respect, and it will always come back to you. And if it doesn't, then that person has the problem. And I find, like, 30 years teaching, people say, how are your students today? And I says, wonderful. Mm-hmm. And people look at me and say, but you're 30 years teaching and you're still saying that? And I go, yes. I says, I enjoy teaching and I enjoy my students. They're wonderful people.
Hilary, let's move to your involvement with the St. Patrick's Day parade in New York City.
Well, I was here in the United States 2 weeks when Frank Byrne had me work the reviewing stand, and very quickly they recognized that I'm a type of person that if I say I'm going to do something, I will do it. And that meant that I got more and more responsibilities. And over the years, John Dunleavy and myself did a lot of the behind-the-scenes organizations. And currently, I'm still doing the same thing, working behind the scenes to make sure that everything is tip-top shape for March 17th, so the Irish community of New York and the United States and put on the best show that we can put on Fifth Avenue on March 17th.
No, Frank Byrne, who was affectionately known, and many would refer to him as Frankie Byrne, he was your uncle.
He was my father's first cousin, but he always said, call me Uncle Frank.
Well,
tell him Uncle Frank sent you.
Now, I know a little bit about uncles who had a great reputation, and were hailed as being, you know, marvelous uncles. I had one myself, Paul O'Dwyer. He was tough, and so was Frank Byrne. Tough in the sense that, you know, you said if you undertake a job, that is akin to commitment to see you through, whether it's no matter how tough it gets.
Yes.
No favoritism with respect to, and no nepotism there when it comes to, you know, say Frank Byrne, who was a great mover and shaker, but also as tough as nails.
Yeah. He was a man, he was always looking for people to help the parade. And he really, as you said, no nepotism. If you were able to do the job, you got the job and you retained the job because you were able to do it. And that's very, very important in a parade this large, that people are in places that are able to carry out the tasks that are assigned to them to, again, ensure the parade goes off well. I say to people, there's an awful lot of moving parts in a parade this size, and a lot of people don't realize how many things have to be done prior to the parade, because they just come on the day and they line up and they march in the parade, but there's so many logistical aspects in the background that have to be taken care of, from reviewing stands, permits, insurance. Ensuring that the streets are open at certain locations when you want to put formations in there, and to ensure that at the time when the parade is actually starting, that the Fifth Avenue is actually shut down. And there's just so many moving parts. We have an official parade program that has to be put together every year, and we have various events that are lead up to the parade. Of course, we have all the aides, 14 wonderful aides, and of course, selecting the Grand Marshal is a huge task. And needless to say, the Grand Marshal that we have this year and every year have been absolutely outstanding, and the Grand Marshal this year, Loretta Brennan Glucksmann, certainly is truly deserving of being the Grand Marshal.
Absolutely. I think, correct me if I'm wrong here, the first woman lady Grand Marshal was Dorothy Hayden Cudahy, then we had Mary Holt Moore, and then comes along to Mary Higgins Clark in 2011. Maureen O'Hara, you know, again, Grand Marshal. And now we have Loretta Brennan Glucksmann. And this is, and this is neither a typo, so wherever you are in the world, this is the 257th New York City St. Patrick's Day Parade. A little bit on, you know, the history of the parade itself. Can you bring us back to what is, you know, what is historically documented as, you know, the first parade? Can you bring us that back for us?
The first parade was held in 1762. That was 14 years before the Declaration of Independence in Philadelphia that established the United States of America. So that means that the first parade was held during colonial British time here in New York. And it was a group of Irish conscripts in the British Army, we understand, that were serving in the Connaught Rangers, and they wanted to have a parade. And you have to bear in mind, Adrian, at that time in Ireland, you couldn't parade, you weren't allowed to sing or speak Irish. And here in New York, 256 years ago, we had a group of Irish people down in Lower Manhattan who were able to parade and speak Irish and sing Irish tunes on St. Patrick's Day. And it was amazing. And you have to also think about it. The Irish conscripts in the Connaught Rangers would have outnumbered their British counterparts. So it was quite wise of their commanding officers to allow them to parade in 1762.
Now, there are many who would say that it wasn't because of the generosity there. But actually, that first parade and several succeeding parades were a form of protest.
Yeah.
And as such, it wasn't as if they had a board meeting and decided it would be all right, you know, to have, you know, this group of protesters. But it was the beginning, again, of a tradition. And it is mind-boggling to think that this was, that there were St. Patrick's Day parades in New York City before the Declaration of Independence.
It is, and what's even more mind-boggling is that it has survived a war of revolution, a civil war, World War One and Two, and the Great Depression. Mm. And there, I don't think there's any institution in the entire world that has survived all of those and has come out stronger than ever. And yet the New York City St. Patrick's Day Parade has. It certainly is a tribute to all the men and women who have gone before us here that have kept the parade alive here in New York City as a salute to Ireland and Ireland's contribution to the entire world.
You mentioned before about the 14 selected aides to the Grand Marshal, and I think tell me if I leave anybody out, but I don't think I will. New York County of Patrick McGettrick, Bronx County, John F. Timoney, Queens County, Virginia Carson,
Minardi.
Okay, Queens County. That's it. Kings County of Rosemary Coulson, Richmond is Marty Cremins. Nassau, Richard O'Neill. Eugene Wynne for Suffolk. Alison Burke for Westchester County. Rockland County, Jim Russell. Orange County, Keith Reynolds. United Irish Counties, Katie Barrett. Grand Council is Dr. Kathleen Cashin. Knights of St. Patrick's, Robert E. Penderson. And the aide at large is Dr. Timothy McNiff. Can you walk us through the process of how the aides are selected? Who does that, and what's the procedure? What are the qualifications?
The aides are selected by the affiliated organizations, and basically the jurisdictions of the Ancient Order of Hibernians select quite a number of the aides. For example, New York County, and they selected this year on a Pat McGettrick, and a lot of the jurisdictions of the AOH have rotational, like if you're in one or a division, then it's your turn, and then it moves on to the next division and the next division, and they also rotate between the men and the women. Some counties it's every year, some counties it's every third year, whatever they decide among themselves. Now, the United Irish Counties, it's a lot, quite often it's the outgoing president that is selected as the aide, and that is Katie Barrett this year. And the Grand Council of Emerald Society, that's all the Emerald Societies that march in the parade, fire department, police, Board of Emeralds, etc. And they selected a Dr. Caston, who is on the Board of Regents of New York State. And the Knights of St. Patrick have Robert Peterson, and Robert is has been a member of the Knights, who have contributed financially to supporting the parade for over 25 years. And then the aide at large is, a lot of times we select an aide at large, and the board of directors selects an aide at large that's reflective of the dedication of the parade. Last year, one of the dedications was to Catholic Charities, so we had Monsignor Sullivan. The previous year, we had the dedication was to the men and women of 1916, so we had Geraldine Johnson, whose father and uncle fought in the GPO in Dublin. And this year, one of the dedications is to Catholic education, so we have Dr. Timothy McNiff, who was selected by the Board of Directors this year. And as you know, the dedication of the parade is to the 20th anniversary of the Good Friday Agreement and to Catholic education.
Let me ask you another hat. You know, you're known as leader as leader under current chairman John Leahy, and of course Mr. Dunleavy, and before that Frank Byrne. I remember distinctly your being on our program discussing what you figured was, and rightly so, the lack of funding despite the 250-plus years, the support for St. Patrick's Day. Everybody, worldwide looked at Channel 4, which again NBC will be broadcast live this year, and said, isn't that great? The parade goes on every year. And nobody said, well, how is this paid for? And how will this be funded into the indefinite future? I remember that discussion on our radio program before, and just as you were about to, establish the St. Patrick's Foundation. I also remember that before then, the green strip on Fifth Avenue was indeed something that was supported for decades and still is. When did the penny drop that, wait a minute, we're taking all of this for granted, sure, this is the fund itself. And as the numbers climb, to put a figure on what generally it costs to as they would say in the west of Ireland, to put on the parade?
Roughly every year, the parade, we have an operational budget of somewhere between 850,000 to a million, depending on the logistical aspects. Big cost, of course, would be insurance. Given post 9/11, that has significantly impacted the bottom line. It's amazing how significant pricing in that area has. Of course, reviewing stands will be another, and then we have a four-hour television show that we produce every year. As we said earlier on, that the parade is 200, and this is the 257th parade, and to ensure the future of the parade, one of the things that is very, very important is the profile of the parade, and that is achieved by broadcasting worldwide live stream as well as on NBC in the tri-state area, and that is a significant cost to the parade. We have groups who are, we have more groups today than we've had in many years marching in the parade. However, the financial support that comes in the form of an affiliation fee is significant, but it doesn't cover the cost, doesn't even come close to covering the cost. Hence the reason why we established the foundation. We were, at the time when we established the foundation, we were looking at revenues. The parade always operated in the black, not in the red, but we were just barely operating in the black. When you had revenues of over 800,000, and when you looked when everything was finally paid, you had 10,000-20,000 left, that would not be sustainable into the future, with increased costs, increased inflation, and so on. So we had to look to an alternative source, and that's why we established the foundation to help support the parade in the future. And a lot of the Irish organizations here in New York and across the country have suffered for membership. I was at the Cork dance there last week, and one of the gentlemen, he was 50 years a member of Cork, Mayo Driscoll's brother, and he says, I remember the Cork dance when we had 1,000 and 1,500 people. And he talked about the immigration laws changing in the 1960s that has impacted Irish immigration into the country. And, of course, that has followed on through into the parade. And, of course, that resulted in us establishing the foundation to ensure the funding of the parade into the future.
In addition to, you know, some of the expenses that you have outlined for us there, the scholarships that are provided, and you know, this year it's Catholic school education, and the theme for the of the Good Friday Agreement, Catholic school education, and the scholarships. How does that work?
The foundation, the mission of the foundation is to support New York City's St. Patrick's Day Parade and related activities through scholarship, ongoing year-round activities of social calendars and like that. So the foundation board decided this year to expand the scholarships with the Catholic schools because of the dedication to the parade. So this year, the foundation announced a scholarship in the name of Cardinal Dolan, where three students in Catholic schools that march in the parade will receive scholarships towards their tuition in these Catholic schools. The parade, that's separate to the scholarships within the parade, which are scholarships for students in college are in Catholic schools, that are family members, are members of affiliated organizations. Scholarship, as you know, is the future. It's the future generations, and by engaging them in their heritage and their culture, we hope to engage them in the future when they're young adults, yes, to be supporters of the parade and to basically people who will step up and take over the parade to ensure its future as well.
The chairman of the parade, John Leahy, said we look forward to evaluating the student entries this year and are grateful for support of schools and colleges who encourage students to submit research papers. Let's tie that in, if we can, to the other issue which you mentioned, which unfortunately becomes less hopeful as each year goes by. Immigrants from Ireland, we could start somewhere around 1965 and right up to this very day, is, and as you will attest to, when I came, when you came, there was hardly, we were welcomed. The process of getting a green card, of coming to America, of becoming part of the fabric of America was not only easier, or we might even say easy at the time, but it was we were a very welcome ethnic group to the United States. Now, as we look at it today, unfortunately, the options for those immigrants who came here with the expectation that if they kept their noses clean, that if they contributed to society, that if they had their kids here, that if they had established themselves here, they would not be under threat of being cast out of the United States. A shameful progression, as we see it. But again, the reality of the matter is that as you look at Irish-born and their miserable, quota of legal immigrants here, it's all the more important that we, take Irish culture and spread Irish culture. And, in spite of much competition for other ethnic groups, we seem to be ahead there. And you as an educator would know that better than many of us.
Sorry, Adrian. When I came, I was extremely fortunate from the point of view that within education, there was an opportunity. And that's what I always say to my students and even to my son. It's very, very important to have an education. Why? Because you get opportunities, and more importantly, you are in a position then to decide if you want to take those opportunities. And I say this to a lot of people who will be considering coming to the United States, is trying to get here is extremely difficult, especially post 9/11, as you know, almost to the point that it's impossible. However, with an education, educators, immigrants are getting opportunities to come to this country. And I would also try and impress on people to stress, especially Irish immigrants, and you have to bear in mind, Ireland has the most educated population in the world, and people considering coming to this country should look to American companies. An awful lot of Irish people, Irish Americans, are in key positions in these companies that would be able to help immigration coming from Ireland in particular because of the high level of education. But I would be I look at the immigration of people that I know, and some of them, their status, and I, my heart goes after them. I consider myself extremely fortunate, and I'm sure you're the same. It's just an amazing turn of events, thanks to, in particular, 9/11, and also as a result of the immigration changes and in the 1960s.
Well, yeah, 9/11 obviously added another kink to what was disgraceful long before then. But anyway, we'll make that a topic for another day. Other than to say that, you know, I led you into in your field of education, that there are some and very little opportunities for anybody to come from Ireland. However, that is something that is real, and considering all of the as we used to say mishmash taking place in Washington and beyond, we'll have to leave that for another time and hope that the significance of parades throughout the United States, and particularly the jewel of parades, the St. Patrick's Day Parade, which is world-renowned, will remind politicians, will remind those who are, you know, looking at the Irish community, reminding them that America was predominantly built by the Irish, that will call for, you know, some reasonable changes.
Yes.
I want to come back to the parade itself, and you and the rest of us, and I'm sure most of our listeners, will remember St. Patrick's Day parades when there was a foot of snow on the avenue, when there was the most inclement weather, and yet it goes ahead. There's no rain date for the St. Patrick's Day parade. And there hasn't been. So what the day brings you has got nothing to do with the price of tea in China. That parade is on.
That parade is on. A couple of years ago, the parade was on, and it was snowing, driving snow. And I looked, and there was only one unit that was really comfortable in the driving snow. And it was the Royal Canadian Mounted Police as they marched up Fifth Avenue, and they weren't wearing overcoats, they were wearing their uniforms, and to me they were the only unit that was comfortable in that weather. Everybody else was long coats, scarves, hats, gloves, the whole nine yards, except them. But you are correct. Rain, snow, hail, sleet, we're there on Fifth Avenue. Last year, we had a snowstorm 3 days before the parades, and I remember the Grand Marshal calling me. His family's flight was cancelled in Ireland, and we managed to be able to get them on the plane the next day.
Yeah.
And I'm talking to the Senate members of the Sanitation Department 2 days before. Yeah. Well, what's the story on the sidewalks on this street, that street? I just drove by. Don't worry, Hillary. We will have all that cleared for the 17th.
Right.
And I have to give credit. The New York City Senate members of the Sanitation Department did a wonderful job, as they do every year when we have snow. They make sure that the streets are clear, the sidewalks are clear, and that we can have our parade. They do an absolute outstanding job. You have Frank O'Keefe there, Matt Malloy, Jimmy McGorry, and they look out for us. And I have to say that we're very, very fortunate that we have people that look out for the parade and make sure that we have continue our 256 years of tradition here in New York City.
Make that Hillary. Although, I tell you what, we have in our archives many interviews with Frank Byrne, of course, with John Dunleavy, going back to Jim Comerford. But with more than 300 marching groups. I saw somewhere that, you know, if you were to take just a few of the groups, you know, from Florida, from Utah, from Wisconsin, Tennessee, and obviously the bulk of these marching groups are from the New York metropolitan area, dozens of Emerald Societies, county organizations, the 69th Infantry Regiment and the Fighting 69th. So many of those. You also have the Irish Defense Force, yeah. 28th Infantry Regiment,
Italian,
yeah,
yep.
And the Irish Navy Reserve. A lot of very prominent and affiliated groups throughout the ancient order of Hibernians, not only nationally but internationally.
Yes. The groups that we have in the parade, as you said, the parade is worldwide recognized, and sometimes we even had groups from France and Spain, which we don't have this year, but most years we do. We even at one time had a pipe band from Tokyo marching the parade, and we had pipe bands from Australia, and of course multiples from Ireland. The 28th Battalion. The 28th Battalion is based in Bundoran in the west of Ireland, and again, this parade was founded by immigrants in the Connacht Rangers from the west of Ireland. So in the last 10 years, the members of the 28th Battalion fund themselves. They get the money together. It's not paid by the Irish Defense Force or anything, and they come out to be part of the parade. And General Michael Corcoran, one of the commanders of the 69th Regiment, is from Ballymote in Sligo. Mm-hmm. And again, the 28th Battalion, that's their area. And they feel very much a connection with the 69th Regiment. So they are so happy to put their hands in their own pockets, fund themselves, come out and pay respect to the 69th and the traditions that we have here in New York. And this year, the Irish Navy Service Reserves are coming from Waterford. And Waterford is significant because you had General Thomas Francis Marr, who was the commander of the 69th Regiment, and a lot of people are not aware that he was the person who actually designed the Irish flag that we fly today, the tricolor. And it was first flown in Waterford. So again, those men and women who are coming next week to march in the parade are here to basically pay respect to the history of the 69th and the history of the Irish emigration from both of those areas, and also to pay respect to all of us here in New York, which is fantastic, I have to say.
Yeah, and in good West of Ireland Connacht tradition, I just want to get at least one dig in here, you know, with my guest, Hilary Byrne. I noticed that there are two brass bands, and are two of your groups are from your own Roscommon. I find that the Lord does work in mysterious ways. I mean, let's face it.
Well, we have the Castlery Brass and Reed Band coming from Roscommon, and the Solstice Choir also coming from Roscommon. Yeah. And that's been in the pipeline for the last couple of years. And when I say that, I was at home sitting in Carrick and Shannon, and they come in to talk to me 2 summers ago, and all of a sudden we want to march in the parade. And I'm going, how do they know I'm home?
Hilary, you're talking to a neighbor. I'm telling you. Yeah. Oh, that is so mysterious, honest to God. I can't imagine how that could happen. All right, listen.
And we have 4 bands coming from Donegal, so nobody's going to be in Donegal this March.
I know.
They're all going to be on Fifth Avenue.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what. And for anybody looking for somebody from my home county of Mayo, let me tell you, they're all over here for the Mayo Dance, Mayo Ball tonight, and they have no notion of going home until after St. Patrick's Day. Congratulations thank you for what you do. At the beginning of the program, I said, being leader of the parade definitely carries with it the positives and the negatives. The negatives are if anything goes wrong at any point, however minor or little, the finger is pointed at you, Mr. Leader, somebody I've known for a long time and respect. And again, thank you for what you do and have a great, great St. Patrick's Day.
All right. Thank you. By the way, thank you very much, Adrian.
Thanks. And the parade itself is broadcast live on WNBC TV4, and it's live streamed on NBCNewYork.com and StPatricksParade.org. Hilary Byrne, again, the leader of St. Patrick's Day Parade in New York City. And I tell you, before we head for the news, and as we stay so long, to Hilary, here's another song from